The Culinary Libertarian Podcast, episode 18.
Welcome to the Culinary Libertarian Podcast, where the philosophy is free, but the food's on you.
Hello, folks. Dan Reed here. Welcome back to the Culinary Libertarian Podcast. Glad to have you here. I'm glad to be here. Click over to my podcasts page at culinarylibertarian.com/podcasts, and there you'll find all of my social media icons, and you can follow me on your favorite format. Please do rate and review the show on your favorite podcatcher. Rating and reviewing the show moves the show up, and the more people who find it are the more people who get cooking. As we enter into another election cycle, the misinformation is going to be incredible. Bite back with Liberty Classroom against all the misinformation and failed education. Get the education you were denied at Liberty Classroom. Visit culinarylibertarian.com/biteback. Today, my guest is Luke Tatum. Luke and I are going to talk about anarchy, what it is, what it isn't, and how to anarchy. Luke is the host of the Culture of Peace podcast and is a native Texan. He has spent the last 8 years immersing himself in the world of libertarianism, and he's also a contributor to the Freedom Song 365 Project, which puts a liberty-themed song in your email inbox every day. Welcome, Luke.
Hey, thank you so much, Dan. Glad to be here.
Well, I'm glad that you're here, because I'm interested in figuring out, figuring out sounds like reaching a conclusion. I don't think that that's where I'm going to go with this, but we're going to talk about how to anarchy. So tell me and tell us a little bit about what your knowledge and experience base is, and also, because these are kind of interesting stories, how you ended up into liberty.
Sure. Okay. Well, I'll start there. I was in the process of dating my now wife, and this was before really the Ron Paul final run for presidency and all of that really got underway. I was interested, along with her, in kind of the concept of raw milk. And there was a local farm that was well-respected, well-known, and we had started buying milk from them just, you know, by the gallon. You actually, in Texas, you have to buy from the farm. They're not allowed to distribute to like local grocery stores or anything. So we were going out into the wilderness, basically, to this farm to buy milk every so often and, you know, making friends with them, getting into that. At that point, I was still kind of a confused recent college dropout and didn't have a lot to say when it came to political discussions. I guess you could call me like a center leftist or something at that point. And so we start doing the raw milk thing. They have an event there at the farm. They called it Family Farm Day, right? And so it was just like, come out, meet everybody, tour the cave where they age the cheeses that they make. It was really cool. And there were various speakers talking about organic farming and, you know, tables set up with flyers and things, just a really fun little event. And so we're at that, and I get a handout from somebody at one of these tables about the, I guess, the dark side of the regulatory apparatus relating to raw milk. And so you have like FDA raids and things like that on people who are just basically raising cows and selling the milk. And that was just kind of a wake-up call, I guess you could call it. So that got some gears turning, and this guy was talking to us about Ron Paul, this really cool guy. And, you know, he supports raw milk rights, is what he said. So I start looking into him. We start watching YouTube videos. And from there, the story is pretty similar to that of a lot of libertarians in that, you know, it's just a rabbit hole. You just get sucked into that. So Ron Paul tells me to read Human Action and The Law by Bastiat and Man, Economy, and State, things like that. So I do. And, you know, I went from center left to like sort of Republican to Ron Paul Republican to minarchist to anarchist. And so it's, that's not to make it sound like anarchism is a right phenomena as opposed to a left phenomena, but, you know, I would say that it was more of the right side of things that appealed to me. And so it's just moving further and further away down the side of conservatism to the point that you question, do we need a government at all? You know, is there any relevant function, any useful function for the government, you know, at all? And the answer that I've eventually come to is no, we don't need that. And the word anarchy itself, of course, is just meaning no rulers. It doesn't mean chaos. It doesn't mean violence and death and Molotov cocktails and that sort of thing. It just means there's no other class of people that get to make rules but don't have to follow them. And so that's kind of where I'm at. Does that answer the question?
It does. And one of the things that I was surprised to learn from you was that you were interested in the raw milk movement. I'm sure you've seen the recent posts in Tennessee.
Yes, yes.
One of the elected officials wants to make it a crime for you to drink raw milk from your own cow on your own land. It's like, Sherry Volontaire and I spoke about that on her show a few months ago and discussed, in particular, the book Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Food Rights. And I maybe have butchered the name of the book, but there was, and maybe still remains, a very strong raw food movement. There was a couple of fellows in California who went, to me, they went to the extreme in raw everything, including raw chicken, which it seemed to work for them, and they lived many, many years, so clearly it wasn't killing them. But the whole point that the FDA can come and just destroy a bunch of food because it doesn't have a pretty purple sticker on it from the USDA seems pretty absurd to me. And who knows better about the wholesomeness of the food than the people who make it?
Yeah.
So that was an irritating thing for me as a food person. So it was an interesting tie-in with the raw milk from you for that.
Well, and it's one of those things where, you know, as you say, who knows better than the farmer what the quality of the food product is? And you can apply that to basically everything. And that's sort of the formula for a libertarian answer to most questions. Like, who is going to be able to educate your child better than you, the parent that knows the child better than any other person? You know, so it applies to everything. And this is just no exception. The people who run what we call the cheese farm outside of my hometown in the middle of nowhere, Texas, they're the nicest people in the world. They will at any point, you know, just step away from the equipment and sit down and talk to you and answer questions about the farm. And you can go see the cows. You can take a hay bale, you know, tour kind of throughout the property. And it's a wonderful experience. It's nothing at all like going to a grocery store. So we just love that.
Your experience with the raw milk and meeting the Ron Paul folks, was that in Texas or was that someplace else?
Yeah, yeah. So I've lived in Texas my whole life.
Okay.
But we've moved around several times. We live you know, up in the Metroplex DFW area now?
There was a variety of people and their farms and businesses profiled in that book. But one of the key groups of people were the Amish. And there still is a strong farming community amongst the Amish. And these people who just want nothing to do with the outside world, is sort of just double tragedy to read how the real world forced themselves onto these simple, peaceful people. So it's kind of double angering for that. All right, so you made my segue easy, going from anarchy into chaos. Mm-hmm. And there are probably many, many, many reasons, and it goes on for many, many years, the idea of why they are synonymous as opposed to disparate, notwithstanding things like kids' movies. I remember my kids, and it's actually kind of a fun movie, Big Hero 6. In the early part of that movie, one of the characters has all of his tool pieces in a very particular place, and there's a tracing for where that tool piece goes. So he's very orderly, and somebody moves one, and he screams, "You can't have this!" So he gets half of it right. Society has rules. This is anarchy. It's like, well, okay. What I think the writers meant to say, and I don't know if this is a legitimate mistake on purpose or if they just didn't know what they meant to say, of course, was this is chaos. So this is just a horribly unfair question, but that's, I guess, how that goes. How do you, or why do you think people make this misunderstanding between anarchy and chaos?
Well, it's a good question. And a lot of it has to do, I think, with the frequent, if not totally 100% of the time, misuse of the word anarchy, because it is used just as a synonym for chaos, just like the word decimate, you know, means reduced by 1/10, but people just use it to mean destroying things. And that's not quite the same principle, but it's misused all the time and very commonly in books and movies and things of that sort. TV shows, you're going to hear people say, this is anarchy, meaning something is going amiss here, or there's so many things happening and I don't know up from down. And that's not what that means, but that's how it's used. And I think it's important that we hold on to the term anarchy and use it properly and try to restore correct definitions wherever possible. You know, it's not to be semantic and obnoxious. It's just that there is a meaning for the word. If you look it up, you'll find it. And we should try to spread awareness of that, because there's a rich history on both the left and right for, you know, believing in a world and advocating for a world without rulership. And, you know, sometimes that's turned into some pretty sour stuff like socialism, communism, at least as presented by people like Karl Marx. But it's also turned into some really wonderful things. People like Murray Rothbard, of course, use the term anarcho-capitalism just to mean and to specify private ownership of the means of production in a environment with no rulers, instead of just using the word anarchy by itself and then therefore confusing everyone, excuse me. So, you know, beyond just the common misuse, I'm not sure I could answer the question sufficiently, but that's definitely true. And I'm sure beyond a shadow of a doubt that some of it is intentional misuse, although most of it probably is not. It's just what people have heard.
Yeah, I would tend to prefer that the errors made by the writers is an error of simple ignorance as opposed to willful misuse of the word. I did take the liberty of looking up the term on my little handy-dandy digital dictionary, and we may have stumbled into one of the sources of this confusion. Definition 1A, absence of government. Okay, fine. That's what we talked about. Definition 1B, a state of lawlessness or political disorder due to the absence of government. So I think the suggestion that order only can happen with government and could never be spontaneous amongst a group of people is at least perpetuated by the writers of this particular app, of this particular version of this particular dictionary. And it goes on then just to say the utopian society, which is just a pipe dream, and then just more and more the same thing. So I got into this a couple of years ago and found the term libertarian, and then introduced to the big scary word anarchy by the podcast, the Actual Anarchy Boys, doing the movie reviews.
Oh yeah, great show.
It is a great show, and Daniel has become a good friend. Then I'm seeing more words crop up, and so one of the things that I find a bit confusing, and I'm sure others do as well, is in this big group of people claiming, identifying as libertarians, there is just a horde of sectionalism. So we have the anarchists and the agorists and the voluntarists, and then we have the paleo everythings. It's like, well, I can't even keep up with it. It's a new paleo thing every week, and I've just stopped trying. But I'm particularly interested in, if you can, what is, if there is, any significant difference between anarchists, agorists, and I may be mispronouncing that, and voluntarists.
Sure. To me, the way that breaks down is mostly who chooses those different labels more than it is a definitional difference per se. I mean, anarchism, we kind of just covered that term, and that's what I tend to prefer as a label for myself. I either say anarchist or anarcho-capitalist, or in more polite conversation, maybe I'll just say I'm sort of a libertarian. But anarchism, very straightforward. I like that term because, again, it's got a definition and I can point to that and say, this is what I believe. Agorism, it's very similar in terms of the definition, if not the same. But and really it's mostly similar to the voluntarist or voluntarist sphere. But I think that the people who go the agorist route and who say, I am an agorist, tend to be more focused. And this is not a knock against anyone, but they tend to be more focused on finding an environment to just do things that are considered illegal. So you have things like the Free State Project up in New Hampshire, where they're trying to get, I believe it's 20,000 libertarians all to move into the same area. But in practice, that area is a lot of drug use and barter and some other things that I don't necessarily want to participate in. And so I think that's more of like an escapism type movement in some ways. I like some of the Free State people, again, so I'm not knocking anyone, but it seems to be kind of abrasive for these people who identify as agorists. They tend to be more like militant when it comes to presenting their ideas, like, oh, you're not even a libertarian. You don't live out in the woods off the grid, you know? And to me, that's not what libertarian means. It's like, there's also the definitions of thick libertarian and thin libertarian, meaning, you know, do you have just the non-aggression principle, or do you have this huge set of ideas that go with it that you also have to believe in order to qualify? And so I think that's some of the trouble there. But agorism, just to be super specific and clear, it's actually a guy named Samuel Konkin in like the 70s presented that term. And so it's kind of an offshoot of this one presentation by him, and that just gained steam. So that's probably the latest emerging of the three terms. Anarchism is probably the oldest. And then voluntarism, I say voluntarism, but either one's fine. That's just, it's basically, again, saying all interactions should be voluntary, which is the same thing as saying there shouldn't be a state, because the state by its nature is involuntary. But, you know, so I agree with this one too. And they're all very similar. It's just this term I like a lot because it has a lot of cool history. It was used like in the 1800s to oppose compulsory school attendance, I think specifically for kids who were like going off to work in factories to bring more income to their families, like in Europe. I don't think this was in the States for a while, but Thoreau, the writer, and then William Lloyd Garrison, the abolitionist, both of those were high-profile people who called themselves voluntarists. And so that's cool. It's got its whole own history to it that, you know, agorism doesn't really. But again, they're sort of the same term. It's just the people that they attract are different.
Okay. Well, that's actually a better explanation than I thought possible. So you did good. Yeah, the thin and the thick libertarian, I tried to comprehend that, and I've heard a few people make really eloquent stabs at clarifying it. I've just decided it isn't that important to me to know the difference. It's much more important probably to be the thing than to know the thing. So you made a comment about the agorists engaging in illegal behaviors or activities. So that idea leads me into what seems to be really the big question here. How does one be an anarchist immersed in the state?
Sure. So in the modern world, the world that we have, say, in the United States, that's where I've always lived, we have an enormous state, and it permeates almost everything. There are certain things you can do and certain things you can't do. And I don't think that we should be morally requiring people to potentially end up in a cage for the rest of their lives for something nonviolent, like not filing their taxes or using drugs that are considered illegal because they have health benefits. You know, I'm not debating that there's health benefits to certain things, but I also don't want to go to prison. So I have to balance those things. Some of the things you can do is things like use Signal by Open Whisper Systems to, you know, use your text messaging with other people, get other people to use that. So it's end-to-end encryption, where the NSA and other alphabet agencies do not have easy access to everything that you send via text message to every other person. That's, you know, no one, to my knowledge, has been imprisoned for that. And it's a free app for iOS or Android. And so that's easy. It's a super easy thing just to minimize the amount of data collection and spying that the state is doing in your personal life. I don't have a thing like a, you know, Alexa or Google Home device or any of that. So I've got that base covered. But some people do, and that's fine. There's different comfort levels. I just think that there's a lot of data harvesting, and the more I can minimize that kind of profiling, that's great. You could do things like use a police scanner. You could use Waze, which admittedly is a Google app, but you can report when police are hiding out and let other drivers not get extorted by road pirates for driving 5 miles over a arbitrary speed limit. That's not illegal. It's just advising other drivers of a truly a hazard on their way to work or to go bowling or whatever they're doing. You can use other apps like Cell 411. If anyone has not heard of that, definitely look it up. It's a way to form little community groups through your cell phone where you can say, report using a map, your GPS. You could say, I've got car trouble. I'm stuck. I have been pulled over by a police officer. I am having an emergency. There's a health emergency. Different things like that you could do to alert people you trust to help you when something's going wrong, instead of just, say, calling 911. In the Dallas-Fort Worth area, I mean, I used to do auto claims for a while, and unless someone is seriously injured, police will just not respond to a lot of 911 calls. I had people tell me, yeah, you know, we waited for like 4 hours for the cops to get there, and they never showed, so we just left after a car accident. And so, you know, things like that, do you really need 911 to come by later and not do anything? No, you need something that actually can solve your problem. So if you have a private network that is built of people you trust, that's something you can do to totally circumvent the 911 system, if you will. Now, if there is a serious injury, that may be the best option, to call 911. But it also might not be. You might be able to have someone else nearby take you to a hospital quickly, in some cases much more quickly than an actual ambulance. So it's just being open to possibilities like that. Something I'm a big fan of is trying to minimize the amount of involvement like commercial banks have in your life. So for those that have not heard of the infinite banking concept, I have a couple episodes of Culture of Peace about this. It's a life insurance policy where you can save money. You can earn money on what you save. It's not exposed to stock market risk, and you can take the money back as a policy loan. There's really a lot to it, but it's a way of saving and accumulating wealth that will never decrease, and you aren't leaving it with Bank of America or Citibank or someone like that. It's not, you know, you don't put up collateral for this. You just have a life insurance policy. And if for some reason you can't make payments on a loan you make, they just deduct it out of your death benefit. And so it's a zero risk, like no background checks, no income statements, just simple, honest way of doing business. And it's very profitable, especially over the longer term. So that's an incredible thing too. Gosh, just supporting private alternatives to some of these status things, just wherever you can, that's always my message. I feel like you could spend $100 on a lot of things, but, you know, donating to a political campaign is just about the lowest on the list for me, because the money is gone. It might go to some kid making phone calls. It might just really get pocketed by someone. It might go to run a TV ad in a place where you don't live, and then it's gone. Or you could, say, pay for like over a year's worth of web hosting with $100, start your own website, start a side hustle. You could start a small e-commerce store. You could commission someone to make an intro for your own podcast. You could buy a microphone. You could do all kinds of things to invest in yourself instead of just trusting politicians. Because really, how well has that worked out for people over the last several hundred years? I think the answer is right there. The question answers itself. It hasn't worked. We're all disappointed with that. That's why we're libertarians, at least in part. So to me, the message is really what Albert J. Knox said, which is there's only one way to improve society, present it with a single improved unit, yourself. So, you know, get better at things, improve your own human capital, build something that you can be proud of that's yours. And so that's what I've been trying to do, and I try to tell other people to at least consider. My friend Nick Pacone of the Sounds Like Liberty podcast.
Yeah, Nicky P.
Yeah, he's awesome. And he and I really like the hashtag more libertarian millionaires. That was his idea first. But, you know, if we want to exert influence and actually affect things, then we have to become better people and develop our own businesses and network and do all of these things. So to me, that's more the answer than it is to go out into the woods and smoke pot, if that's, you know, a fair enough answer.
It is a fair enough answer. So I'm going to give a couple of things, just sort of devil's advocate / pushback here. So the stories of 911 and the police taking a long time to respond, I think everyone's aware of those stories if they don't have personal experience. But the way the system is built, the insurance company is going to require an official police report before they help you with the payment for the, let's assume it's the car, not the person. While there is a way to remove yourself from the scene of the accident without that official piece of paper, I don't know how you, in this system, and maybe there's a way that I don't know, I think you're kind of stuck. I think you're not getting your insurance payments, which, by the way, you are compelled to have.
Right. There's a lot of problems. I mean, a lot of problems with insurance, and it's tough to even innovate in that sector because any change on like the way that the business is done has to go through the local regulatory bodies. They have to approve things like that. And so there's some big hurdles there. I think if you got rid of, say, the Department of Insurance, just abolished it, then that would start to fall apart and reorganize very, very fast. But you're right. There is a certain element of, well, we need a police report. But if one is not present, which is pretty frequently, at least in Texas, you know, that's the only state I've ever done insurance work in. But if there's no police report, we might send off a request for one anyway, and then just solve the claim, because you don't want it to sit there and be a 60-day-old claim for a fender bender. You know, the insurance companies already process so much. They already handle so many issues that there's a strong incentive, at least in the environments I worked in, to figure out what's most likely, resolve it. And if something conflicting comes in later from a police report or something, which is not a fast process at all, then things could be revised later. And so I think in some sense, it's already circumvented just because it's such an archaic and slow process. Like, police reports are so slow. There's third parties that specialize in obtaining and providing police reports for companies. And, you know, even then it can take 2 or 3 weeks or more. And if you don't have exactly the correct information, you may never see it, even if it exists. So it's a fascinating business, but it's more about, you know, what does the damage on the vehicles tell you? And what are the statements from the drivers that were involved tell you, more than it is like needing a police report? Now, states vary. So there are states it's a bigger problem, but that's my experience, at least, with that.
The NSA, it's sort of become almost a joke. And I think a common reaction would be, oh, come on, Luke, you're just conspiracy theorizing. But I don't know, maybe you can say that there is zero conspiracy theorizing, but the NSA seems to go hand in hand, no pun intended, with the smartphones. And even though you don't have, and I don't have one of those devices plugged into my wall, I have a smartphone, I have a computer, I have iPads. I mean, whether or not we like it, we're all connected somehow to Siri and or Alexa, and she's always listening. So where does legitimate concern end and conspirizing begin? Or are they the same thing?
Well, it's really hard to draw a lot of these lines, and I'm not a tech expert as much as some people may think that I am. You know, I'm not a web developer or a programmer. I know some programming, but not enough to, you know, I've never released an app on the App Store or anything like that. And so it's tricky business. As a general rule, just in life, I try not to worry about things too much that are outside of my control. You know, the NSA exists. I don't have the power to change that. But things like using Signal minimize their ability to see everything that I do, and it's very painless. There's also an app out there from, oh gosh, I think it's Cloudflare. They do some encryption for websites, and the app is called 1.1.1.1. Not very easy to say, but it's easy to type, right? And that just puts all your DNS requests. So whenever you go to a website and you send that initial ping out to get the website and bring that back to your device, that goes through Cloudflare's servers first. So it doesn't go straight to your ISP. So Spectrum or Time Warner Cable or whoever it is doesn't have a list of every single website you've ever requested to visit. So that's nice. It's an improvement. It's not a total solution. But, and just a word on conspiracy theories, I try really hard not to devote a lot of my time to that, because these are things that we'll never know in most cases if they're true or not. It doesn't directly affect me. I can be highly suspicious of the government and not, you know, worry if every single thing that's ever happening is being filed in a database. And just generally with surveillance, I don't care if Google knows what I'm doing and I've accepted some terms and conditions saying that they can know that. I just really don't care. You know, usually they're using that kind of thing for my own benefit. They're showing me websites that are more likely to be what I want to look at. But because we have this huge state and they have so much invested in identifying types of behaviors and learning about potential terrorists and things like that, that concerns me. I don't want the government to have that information. And so for me, the line is when you have like built-in back doors into the Android phone or the iPhone software where the government can just get in because, well, we're the government, that's scary. And they've been pushing, the FBI has been pushing for built-in back doors like that for a long time. The one thing that we have on our side is that if you have a back door, there's no way to make sure it's only used by the government. And so that prevents a lot of programmers from wanting to even go there, because they know that if there's a back door, hackers are going to find a way to use it. And then the gig is up basically at that point. If the whole generation of iPhones comes out and the NSA or the FBI or the CIA or whoever can just get in because they feel like it, and they just have to check some box saying they're using it honestly, then it's all over at that point. The whole thing is compromise. And we're not there yet. So it's just a matter of, you know, finding your own comfort level, learning a little bit about these things, and just setting yourself up so that you're not a easy target. You know, maybe the NSA can eventually unencrypt my signal messages and find that there's nothing to see there. But that wastes a lot of their time and resources, and that makes me, like, childishly happy. So, you know, that's just my approach.
Well, I think you have a lot of valid points, and there was I'm sure you're familiar with Dr. Robert Epstein, who's been on Tom's show numerous times. There was an episode that stuck with me so well, I actually sent it around to a bunch of friends, which was the search engine manipulation episode. And I'll put a show notes page link to the Tom Woods podcast. Episode 1061 will be on culinarylibertarian.com/18. And there's Dr. Epstein has some recommendations, killing Chrome, getting rid of Android, and those home devices, but also switching to a new, different search engine called StartPage, mostly because Google and everybody else is just recording all this information and just making these digital profiles of all the people. He sounds well-informed and like he does a tremendous amount of research on this stuff. So that was a bit of an eye-opening episode. Me was like, wait a minute, it's just I'm not seeing what I want to see. I'm seeing what somebody else wants me to see. And even if something as innocuous as looking for a pair of socks, well, it gets into some really serious and important information and decision-making opportunities that may not be my decisions. And that's a bothersome trend.
It is. And I use StartPage. That's my default browser or my default search engine, excuse me. And I use the Brave browser, which is effectively Chrome. I mean, it's 99% Chrome. It's just without the spyware. Because if Chrome wasn't like from a trusted developer like Google, it would be considered spyware. It tracks all kinds of things. And even when you turn settings off, they can re-enable later. So I highly recommend both of those, the Brave browser and the StartPage search engine.
Well, we started talking about what is anarchy in its basics, and I feel like we've turned into a Mel Gibson movie. You know, I haven't watched that movie in a long time. I forgot what it's called. It was just like...
Oh my gosh. It's Catcher in the Rye, right? Like that's the thing, the book.
Oh, actually Conspiracy.
Yeah, maybe that's it. Yeah.
Yeah. But it was, you know, had a big cast, him and Patrick Stewart and Julia Roberts. I think it was called Conspiracy Theory.
I like that movie. It's been a long time.
I think it was intended really to show just how bananas crazy somebody is who thinks the government's out to get them, when it turns out, by the way, the government actually is out to get you. But I kind of want to go see that again just to – now, I will not be putting my coffee in any kind of a combination device thing because I need the coffee with a high, high sense of urgency every day. So that would be goofiness, but it was kind of funny anyway. Well, it has been a long time. I wonder how well it has aged with what I have learned in the last however many years it's been. But I've also, I'm a nerd and I'm a big fan of Patrick Stewart as Jean-Luc. And so, you know, why not? All right. Well, you have been a fountain of information, more than I expected, and I expected a lot. Give us how we can find you. You've got a podcast. We have a webpage. How else can people find out what Luke is doing?
Sure. Yeah. LukeTatum.com is the best place. I'm not great about posting a lot of blog posts, but that is where Culture of Peace is hosted. I don't have cultureofpeace.com or anything. It's all just at luketatum.com. And so the episode numbers are just luketatum.com/1/2. You can go to luketatum.com/episodes and just get a list of only podcast episodes. There's 23 up right now. I haven't released one in 2019 yet. So, you know, I'm on a bit of hiatus. This is my first podcast activity this year, but lots of really great stuff coming up this year. I'm hoping to get even more episodes out in this year, because I didn't start this show until March of last year. And then, you know, I'm on YouTube. I've got a YouTube channel for the show. Just search Culture of Peace. I've got a Twitter I don't keep up with too much. The best ways really are just the website and the MeWe. I have a page for the show, Culture of Peace, and then a community group both there and on Facebook. The Facebook page is just facebook.com/Culture of Peace Podcast. And that's where I post a lot of news stories. I posted about that situation with the Tennessee farmers and, you know, things like that. I'll put some commentary and things out there whenever I have something to say. So those are the best ways, really. Facebook, MeWe, and luketatum.com. I will also just have to plug really quick freedomsong365.com. The signups are closed right now, but that's a project with myself, Sherry Voluntary, that you mentioned earlier, and Nikki P. We all do write-ups on songs with libertarian themes. And so every day of 2019, from January 1st to the very end, we have a song get emailed out with a lot of commentary from all of us. And so signups are closed, but we'll open those up again eventually. So if you just sign up on the email list there, you'll be the first to know if you can get in on that later.
I had heard about it, and I saw the information about it. I don't think I realized it was one a day.
Yep.
That's a big bite.
It is. It's a lot of work. I think more than probably anyone but us realizes, but man, it's a lot of fun, and we've had some really great response so far. So I couldn't be happier with that project.
Excellent. Well, that's very cool. Well, I know that time is running short for you, and I think we're right at where we need to be, so you can do the things you need to do today.
All right. Well, hey, I appreciate it. Thank you so much. Dan, you've got a great show going here, and I have only listened to a few episodes so far, but I really liked what I heard, so I'm going to go back to your back catalog and check it all out, and I encourage everyone else to do that as well. You're a great host.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. Since we are low on time, I'm not going to bother you with my food questions, but perhaps I'll email them to you and you can at least type me your responses so we can put that up for people to read on the show notes page.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'd love to.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Have a good day. All right, folks, that's going to do it. If Luke's idea of being your own boss sounded like a breath of fresh air to you, and you're interested in starting your own blog or website or podcast or even an online business, you're going to need web hosting. Use the hosting service I use, Bluehost. Their customer service is excellent. They work seamlessly with WordPress, and they offer a variety of plans for your needs. Check out Bluehost today at culinarylibertarian.com/host. See the show notes page for today's episode, culinarylibertarian.com/18, for details about bonuses for your Bluehost subscription when you buy through my link on the show notes page, culinarylibertarian.com/18.